So today I'm here at the Melbourne Writers Festival in Festival Square, and this is the first day of the festival, and I'm speaking with Abdi Aden. Thank you very much for speaking to us, Abdi. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much for you inviting me.
Now, you've got an incredible story, and your memoir, Shining, The Story of a Lucky Man, has recently been released. And it tells the story of how you left Somalia during the Civil War, and through a very long journey through Europe and a number of countries, you did come to Australia. It's an incredible story and a very moving story. But one thing I sort of noticed and I didn't expect was the humour in the story. I found a lot of it very funny, and I thought, maybe I shouldn't find it funny because it's not a funny story, but is that you? Is that your sort of humour? Or is that you looking back on your experiences and being able to sort of see some of the funny sort of aspects of it?
I've always been the same person as a kid, so humour must be just me.
Yes.
And a lot of people I travelled with couldn't even understand why, while we were travelling as a refugee, they couldn't understand why I still make you know, funny things.
Yes.
During the time. But yeah, I think you should laugh. It's okay, you know, to laugh. And I learned that having a laugh and is probably a good thing. I think I'm very unique as a refugee because when the war started, and normally the war in Western world, people think war started at that particular time, but if 4 or 5 years earlier, things get, it's not as settled. And so the war started when I was 13, but I left Somalia when I was almost 15.
Mm.
Then I came to Australia at 16.
Yes.
So it's unheard of. I've never met a lot of people who say I left as an unaccompanied minor or teenager who actually went from Africa to Europe to Australia. It's a very rare cases.
That's what makes your story quite extraordinary, really. How you went and how you travelled and what you went through, really, to come to Australia in the end.
I think you're right. It's the last person to say it's very, unique story. But, you know, you have to learn your language.
Yes.
A lot of people wouldn't survive, not survive as a life or death, but survive as even to do well for themselves. When I came to Melbourne, you lost a lot of confidence, a lot of self-esteem.
You lost confidence.
I didn't think even I would bounce back. I couldn't see myself even learning English language because the trauma and things that I've seen. Often people think about Somalia, but even Romania, it wasn't a good thing because they got rid of Ceausescu, their president, for communist, and I went there, the country wasn't settled. In Romania itself, a lot of refugees, a lot of violence, a lot of things I've seen as, 15, and that I shouldn't see, and people trafficking, prostitution. So coming to Melbourne, I needed to rest a long time, but which I did.
Yes.
But then I had to start a new life, English language, new system. And the country, Australia is great, but if you cannot survive and learn the system and value, you struggle.
Yes, yeah. The other thing I noticed about your style in the book too was you have a conversation with the reader. It's like you're talking to the reader sort of face to face. Is that something you sort of found natural too?
Yes, it is, John.
It's like almost philosophizing a bit too.
Yeah, I people used to tease me as a kid, doing that, but not realizing, I write my memoir that way. Mm-hmm. And that's actually everything you read the book and everything you, the way I behave in the book is exactly the same as I do day to day. And when you have a sense of humour in a way, like I don't plan it, it's just me.
No, it's just you.
I try to work hard to be serious. So it's opposite to most of the people, but I just love, talking to anyone who really interested about anything that I do.
Yes, yeah. And I was interested too, Robert Hillman played a role too. How did that sort of work?
Robert Hillman was probably the best match for me because when I signed the contract, HarperCollins, what happened was and they said we can find you someone to support you, and who wrote refugee stories before.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, oh, you know, just I'll see it and believe it, you know, that kind of thing in my back of my mind. But although I have faith, and when you have something in faith, actually it works, I find. So when, and they said, look, if it doesn't work out in 3 months, we'll, you know. And I thought, look, I'll try my best to be playing my role.
Yes.
And that's what I do in life. I play, even meeting you today, I was very excited to meet you and tell you about story. So Robert Hillman, I met him and we start talking, and he was just the right person for me. Because he actually understood some of the things that I was trying to explain. Because some people would take them, they ask you again and they write something that you haven't said.
Yeah,
although I wrote everything and I recorded stuff, so I gave him everything. So it just worked it out. And when I looked at the final draft, it was beautiful.
You were happy with that. Yes. And today you're here at Melbourne Writers, you're taking part in a forum on, I think it's called The Right to Belong, which is about the future of multiculturalism. So that idea of belonging must be a very strong thing in you. I mean, belonging in, you know, Somalia as a child, and then it seemed like you're looking for somewhere to belong. Is that how it sort of works for you?
I think that one thing, when I tell people things, they actually, I don't know, I feel like they don't believe you even. Like, you know, when I came to Melbourne, it took me a long time to find that belonging. And I did find belonging, you know, like following sports and those little...
But not cricket.
No, it's probably a long way for me. Cricket, I haven't been exposed to, being from Melbourne, you know, other sports are first, you know. Cricket is good, but, you know, as I described the book, that's exactly how I felt. But yeah, I'm the type of person, I try my best to include myself if it's possible. And Australia is a great place to play, but there's other things where a lot of people have been here so long and they don't belong, they feel like, you know. But I there's a still way, the older I get, I always find a few things that I need to find belonging again. But, you know, I feel, you know, I feel the belonging in Melbourne, and I like to continue to always amuse myself and learn. Learning is one of the things. But this forum today is very important because there's a lot of people who've been in Australia a long time, longer than I have, or people who haven't been longer than I have will be listening. And I really wanted to explain what it's like to be. But also, John, one thing I often say, and a lot of people don't say again, is I'm not only a person who's, you know, I fit in being a Muslim background, have a dark skin, a migrant, refugee. So I've got a lot of identity. But those identities have to find belonging. So if you find belonging one side of the sports example, or, you know, Australian, you know, the Australian first world and beautiful place, but then you always find places where you don't actually be accepted and included. So I carry a lot of identity. And the way I see myself, doesn't matter how much I see myself an Australian person, but always being reminded that I'm not kind of where I'm from, and you're not, you know, people treat you like you're newly arrived and things like that. So that actually sets back sometimes. But I see a bigger picture. So, and I learned English so quickly. Not, wasn't easy, I tell you. But then I went to university, which was unheard of. You know, most of my peers, people that I was around, there was not such a, you know, you know, looking after, nurturing yourself. Yeah, it's unbelievable. When people remind me, I'm thinking, oh, it must be really great to able to find a good job in local government, working with young people, something I love doing. And today, as I'm traveling around the world, or in Australia, and meeting so many new people, so it's a great thing to do.
You said one, just on that, you said an interesting thing in the book, lots of interesting things, but one you said more about that we as Australians can never totally understand someone from Somalia, and someone from Somalia can never understand someone from Australia. So is there always that sort of non-connection? As much as we try, that there's a bit of a barrier?
Absolutely.
We should just admit that? And
we should just admit and actually come, and I'll talk about today in the forum, but we should actually come up with a new model, like a new way of, and I love to always find the new ways. I don't like having the old way of just doing, you know. So you're so right in saying in the book is always Somali people, I don't know whether they try or whether they don't, or they just, it's hard to understand being a Somali, and it's very hard to understand Australian person, no matter how much you tell them. You know, 20 years I have a friend, they ask a similar question. So yes, exactly right.
So we should just admit that and sort of try and move on.
Yes, I believe that. So because it's so important to accept how things are than worrying about changing someone. It's really important.
Or pretending that it's all wonderful and all.
Exactly right. You know, it's not, because it's not very wonderful, everything. No. I, to be honest with you, in Australia, it's probably one of the best when it comes to wealth. We live in a really a wealthy country, but people are still not happy. But not, I don't mean not happy as all Australian. It's not like that. It's more like people are still not saying, look, I'm probably sitting at the top of my world. Let's accept everyone. And it's not. And this is where, so when people are poor in different countries, poor, not money, poor is information. Some people actually don't have the information you and I have. So when do, if we are, you and I are not appreciating, what's another hope for those people? So I look at that way. It doesn't come out very well sometimes, the way I say it, but I honestly think that if we cannot be happy what we have and what we are, it must be very, I don't know, human nature maybe.
Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it's just the way we're made.
The way we're made.
I hadn't sort of heard somebody actually admit it. You know, it's the sort of thing you don't want to admit to, really.
No, I'd like to.
Because we like to pretend that's all nice and we're all getting on. But maybe there is always a difference, and we should just accept that and respect it.
Different, even if you look at our society in Australia now, is a lot of people will tell you, "I'm not happy because I have no same rights." And when we talk about, you know, rights for same, you know, sex people, you know, marriage, and people tell you, and we are the same people. So it must be some kind of a human nature to admit the fact is, there's always a new way, and there's few people don't want to accept it, that we are different.
So,
but it's actually nice to accept it.
There probably is. And one of the other interesting things I thought you also said too, you said, maybe you can say a bit more about this, you become an expert in hardship, you become a refugee little by little. Can you say a bit more about what you meant there?
Well, yes, because, you know, as a Somali person coming from a very dominant culture like Australia, having a strong, wealthy, very proud, you know, little things like, you know, having a very proud Somali culture, having, you know, when Somali people are doing sports in the world, you're so proud, and then you become, one day you have no government, you have no people, your own people don't like you because you're a different tribe, or your people don't like you, it becomes hard. It becomes a situation where you don't trust your own. And this is something in Australia, I don't want people to reach that level, because once you do that, it's very hard to come back. So yeah, you become little by little, because when I was traveling, when the war started and I was traveling to Somalia, in between Kenya, and then went to Egypt, and then were transit there, and then in Romania, I was actually, I didn't want to accept it. So one day you become, well, I have nothing. I might as well say, you know, I'm a refugee. But in your head, you don't want to admit. But then slowly, slowly you accept it, And this is where the important thing is. Some people accept who they are and refugee and that, and they move on and then bring day to day something, nurture them. Like myself, I came to Melbourne, I accepted. A lot of people don't want to accept it. They're refugees. They're still. So you become slowly, you accept it slowly, and then you lose a lot of confidence, you lose a lot of kind of a dignity on yourself. And this is some of the Australian people who don't want to lose themselves, that dignity. I can see it because I have went through myself. So you become slowly, slowly refugees, but it's not something you actually will get rid of.
How do you mean you see Australians as losing some of that dignity?
Well, that's why we always get fear of other things, like a fear of, even if there's no fear, even there's not even, I can see the refugees coming to Australia, it's only maybe 3%, and Australia actually can have those people to employ it, and that's part of our immigration policy. But again, I don't want to talk about too much immigration policy, but we just fear, are they taking our jobs? And I can see that in people having, that's just one element.
That's sort of linked to something else you said in the book I wanted to ask about, where I think your friend Mohammed said about Australians, they're like children.
Yeah.
And, you know, they think about sport and the weather and they're just children.
Yeah.
Can you say a bit more about that?
I don't mean like a children, because I see myself Australian.
Innocent of what's happening in the world, perhaps.
But no, it is. And you don't want to lose that. No. But you don't want to also say that. But sometimes you don't want to shy away.
No.
Because that can come as an insult to people. Mm. But it's not.
No, because I don't see it as an insult. I think it's a reality.
Yeah. But some people might took it as that way.
Yeah, they might.
But it's not. Most Australian people are, you know, they know that and they're aware and they like it in a way. I come across a lot of people who said, I like that phrase. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and saying that children is like not having a really, like we complain a lot of little things.
Mm.
But it's very hard to tell people, don't complain. It's not like, it's very hard to take it.
Mm.
So Australia, I find sometimes, I don't want people to lose that innocent, because then we become a very, we stop caring about things.
Mm.
And that's why I like to participate. I'm not scared of participation, because I know Australia is a good place and people have a good heart.
Yeah.
It's just that fear of being told even. People often say to you things, and when you ask them, have you ever met a Somali person? They say no.
Mm.
Have you ever met refugees? No.
Mm.
Have you ever met a Muslim person? No. And an African person even? No. So why you don't like already? And they say, and these people are saying, it's not only Australian born, this is even old migrants.
Yes.
I don't want refugees. Mm. So I don't want to say only Australian versus non-Australian.
No,
it's like Amelia, right? It's actually the whole country is individual. Some people are really have a lot of thinking, like yourself, are you doing your job, and I love, you know, what you do and getting storytelling, same as me. So a lot of people are not like that. They don't want to face it, the truth of what's happening.
No, no. It does sort of link in though, that the fact of the fear, because there was a study released from Monash University this week that talked about Australian men particularly are the ones that are most afraid of migrants. And people born in Australia were more afraid of migrants than people born outside Australia, I think. So that does exist, that sort of fear of people coming in. And is it just that we want to hang on to that sort of old idea of, you know, a nice, white, comfortable Australia, and we haven't woken up yet to the real situation in the world?
I can a little bit disagree. There's a contradiction there because, you know, you mentioned this study of the Australian men not liking fear, and I think losing a power. Australian men also have a fear of women.
Mm.
It's not only migrants. So if you look at it deep, but I think it's more deeper than that. I think for me, what is, and I will say today if I get the opportunity on the forum, is that we need to actually change. No one said this before. I came up with this.
Mm.
We need actually to work on mainstream Australians about everything in the world, not the other way around.
Mm.
Often I find why newly arrived, why migrant, why refugees do this, but if we look at the other way around, we wouldn't say why, we would actually support it.
Mm.
And these people will become Australian.
Mm.
So we don't see it that way. We actually don't educate the mainstream. We mentioned that the study shows men.
Mm.
You know, we actually should be educating, saying to, or maybe we can use a fear of actually, yeah, and the problem we have men in the world
in general
is because we don't talk about it.
Mm.
This is huge. We just, you know, you and I, the only time we talk about it is after we have maybe 4 or 5 beers, maybe, or if only, and then we might cry after that. But the point is, but we actually, that will work. I like that. I like to work on the people in power and majority of, because I have seen it in Somalia. The war started, and I know clearly why the war started. It's hard to explain other people. I can say it, but it might not make sense. I can see it. And the fear, the war actually started.
Mm.
And still we're having the same problem. So I can actually see clear what the problem can sometimes be. Because if men who have power in Australia will learn about no fear of a refugee woman come from Syria with 5 children, there's no threat to that.
No. So you do see with Australian men that there's something, there's a fear of perhaps the unknown or the fear of women's power? Or
yeah, or very clearly.
Yeah, yeah. More so in Australia than... But do you think it's a worldwide thing?
No, it's a worldwide thing. It's not only Australia at all. No. Not Australia, but the Australian men have nothing to worry, where other people have something that you can touch and say worry about.
Mm.
But in Australia, especially in the West, have nothing to worry about. No. We actually create our own fear.
Mm.
We do. Mm. Because someone will come out and say something that absolutely not true, and then guess what, someone who is very angry, guess what, they love that because they have nothing to lose. So and this is, I can see that in the media often, someone will let someone say whatever they want to say, but then, and then when someone else says, we don't actually discipline that person, we discipline the community spoke, you know. So things got squared and squared. But I can see Australia is probably one of the best country, and we don't want to lose, and that phrase about being a children is probably the best one to describe the best way. But and sometimes when children have fear, or someone who have never been experienced, have they have more fear than you and I, because they have never experienced this. So they will actually go defense.
It's so, a bit of a shock to hear that phrase, but when you think about it, you think, yeah, it's true. It's, so there's a learning in that as well.
And not only Australian men, Somali men the same. They have a fear. If Somali men wouldn't have a fear, Somali would have been better placed to be, you know, and that's the case. And women in Somalia plays a big part. It's a big part, and that's the truth of it. It's not hidden or anything. People don't want to talk about it. A lot of women don't want to talk about it because they think the value of their culture will lose. And I'm not being, you know, religion, and I'm just saying basic thing where man can get away a lot of things, women can't. Children and women miss out huge.
So just sort of looking back on your life coming from Somalia, how do you think you did survive? Was it just your, you know, you talk about luck, you know, the story of a lucky man, was it luck or... was it your personality, or do you have a sort of a feeling or ideas about why you sort of survived when others didn't survive?
Well, there's two survival, I think. For me, it's a two types of survival. One is traveling as a refugee, but one in Australia too. So
you might put two different.
They're two different. Different I could survive the war, but come here and not survive. Like not survive for me is it's not point
as a real as a. Full person.
And bouncing back and doing what I'm doing. You know, that's that for me, it's that's amazing. I mean, a lot of people survive.
Amazing for us.
No, I can't believe it. I actually cannot believe that I'm sitting with you here comfortably, and I see you as a friend. I mean, it's that trust. People don't trust people. People come from my cases. People, Somali people still say to me, I don't know, I couldn't do what you do. People from Sudan, people from Australian men say to me, they say, I could not do what you... And I'm thinking, am I a very unusual person?
Perhaps you are.
Maybe I am. And I admit the fact is things that doesn't bother me. And I learn things quickly. And this is the thing. So going back to survival, I think I survived it because I had a faith of everything. If I meet someone and they really look after me, that 2 hours or half an hour I'm with them, all the problems will go away. I see. But I always, as a kid, I had this thing, and it's hard to explain. Maybe one day I'll find out what it is. I'll just remember as a kid, I could be 9 or 10, thinking, you know what, you know, I cannot wait to grow up. You know, I cannot wait to enjoy life. So I actually liked living life, and I liked people. It doesn't matter how... You know, I disagree with people, but when I meet with them, I just don't have fear of, I don't hold that grudge on people. And if I have a really problem with individual, I'll just tell them. I said, I'm really sorry, I can't participate because it makes me unhappy. And they go in shock and they get defensive. I find that now. But I think I basically survived because I just love being... I love my own environment, and a lot of humor always. Humor always comes when I'm comfortable. And then it goes away. You know, like humor doesn't come, and that's me. You know, always myself. And even my son said to me, "Dad, you're overconfident." And I said, "Oh, I don't know. I don't like the overconfident. I like just confident." You know, but I must embarrass him. You know, but
that's normal.
Yeah, and very normal. But that's why I just laughed about being a, you know, adolescent worker for that long, and being exposed to a lot of education and world. And you know, I didn't see any offense to that. But you know, he's growing up. go from there. But I think I survived to just being myself.
Yes.
So the Melbourne one, or Australian survival, is learning English, finding a real friend, not the Facebook one, so as it said, in joke, you know. And then you actually finding, I mean, I have a fear, I have fear more than other people, you know. And I know that, I accept it. You know, some days, you know, I have a fear of, and I don't have to deny and lie about it, but again, I manage because I know why that is, why the fear I have, and I'm not the only one in a way, but you know, and I know where my fears come from, and that's another thing. But it took me 10 years, John, to, you know, my nightmares didn't stop 10 years after the war in Australia. I used to have a nightmare when I see someone say something to me in the streets, or when I see Iraq war, or when I see someone being injustice, you know, my level of injustice is really high. I wish it wasn't. You know, and sometimes, you know, it worries me. But, you know, but then after 10 years, after my mother, you know, joined and find my sister, and things got better. And then I went to, you know, I did a TAFE in university. Because I gave myself medicine, which is means that what I wanted it in life, so my actual worried finished in a way. Now I'm comfortable, but my fears are still there. But the actual, because I've become successful myself, not successful what people say, but I become as Abdi what I wanted it in life, which is having a family and having a job.
So just a final question then, Abdi, what are your hopes for the future?
My hopes for future is just anything, myself or
for yourself, and I suppose in general, for, well, make it as wide as you like, Australia, the world.
My future, I'd love to see more talking about these topics, about young people growing up, and then multiculturalism. Often, if you go that line, I really wanted people to start talking. And the other thing I didn't mention, I'll go back to, is Australia is probably the best time is now, not 90s. Now is actually, because people are a bit aware of it, and we have a group of people actually wanted to change things. In Melbourne, the population, you know, 80% want to change, and they're very, you know. But my hopes in the future is Australia. I want Australia to be the best place, which it is in a way, because I've never had a classroom sitting with a Chinese person. I've never had an Indian person. I always had a lot of Somali people. So for me, I'm very lucky to be able, a country where we're all the same. I thought this will never happen by lifetime when I was in Somalia. This, you know, will never happen. And it happened to me as a teenager when a class where, you know, people are different cultures. So my future, like thinking, is I want to keep continue what I'm doing. I really want to do, I find what I love doing, talking to young people, writing stories about, and I'm very, very too honest when I write stuff, and I have to, you know, work it on with the people, the level of the audience, you know. But I am very honest, and I thought if I do that, I might do some change in the world.
Well, it's been a privilege to speak to you today, Abdi. Thank you very much for giving us your time.
Thank you very much, John.
Thank you.
Thank you.